Hey, so Breaker 19 on the interwebs, get your ears on for the GMB Fitness Skills Podcast. Yeah, I'm not going to do the whole spiel because today we have two really cool guests on that we're going to be talking to, and I'm going to introduce them in a second, right after I introduce the guy that I probably shouldn't have to introduce because he's always here, Ryan. Hey, Ryan.
Hello, hello. What's up, everybody?
All right. So, see how easy that was? It was so fast and quick. All right. So today we have the illustrious Stephen Lowe and Chris Avalto from eatmoveimprove.com. They're really good guys doing a lot of interesting stuff in various kinds of training, and we're going to get into all that stuff and talk to them and discover their secrets.
I don't know about that.
All right, so cool. You guys just want to say hi real quick?
Hi, I'm Chris.
Hey, I'm Steve. Glad to be on the show.
Yeah,
awesome. Good to be here.
Thank you very much. So I guess we should say the way we found you guys is because of when we... Man, I don't even know when we found you guys. I think Ryan was obsessed with one article on your website like 2 years ago, and he kept sending it to Jarlo and I like as if he had just discovered it. And we're like, why do you keep sending us this link? He's like, oh, I sent this to you before? I'm like, yeah, like five times. So
you know you loved it.
That
was a great article. Yeah. It was just funny because I was like, God, I don't know if you guys, do you remember I sent this to, wait, have you seen this? And anyway, yeah, it was about five times, wasn't it?
So. Yeah.
A lot of them are really long, so you could just keep revisiting them and not.
Yeah, I think that's maybe what it was.
Was it the fundamentals article? The programming article?
I think
it was one of the first ones.
So. Yeah, and so the article we're talking about is probably, I'm guessing, one of the most popular articles on eatmoveimprove.com. It's fundamentals of, what is it?
Body weight strength training.
And you should definitely check that out. We'll put a link to it underneath the audio here. So there's a lot of stuff that we should be talking about, and I think that we should just get right into it. Basically, what we've got in common is that we teach kind of a movement skill kind of thing that I think is kind of maybe not as well defined in a lot of people's minds as it could be. You know, are we teaching people like how to get jacked? Are we teaching people gymnastics? Are we teaching people like calisthenics? I think we've got a lot of semi-related kind of disciplines of movement here that we're not really, neither one of us, GMB or Eat, Move, Improve, is teaching totally within one discipline. And I think that's kind of confusing. Do you guys have any thoughts on that?
I think you're absolutely right. It's difficult as well because I don't actually think I teach or know any one discipline all that well, but I pull from a few different ones in my own personal training. And really, I think my training in particular and what I know best is just trying to go towards things that I think are really cool. And that just kind of pulls from a few different places all at once.
I think for us too, you know, like, I mean, Ryan has some gymnastics experience. We all did martial arts, but most of what we do at GMB just comes from a lot of different areas. And I wouldn't say that any of us is very, very proficient in any one of those. It's just kind of looking at things that we think is interesting.
The reason I think it pulls from so many places is I have a really difficult time working with people that don't have well-defined goals. So I kind of sometimes, like with the handstand challenge that I recently started, I kind of define a goal for them and then move them towards that. But when people have really well-defined goals, you kind of tend to see that these things from different disciplines all come together and work really well together. And whereas on their own, they might have their own strengths, but they come together really well for these particular things.
You mentioned that handstand challenge. This is as good a time as any. You've got this 28-day handstand challenge, which apparently is getting a lot of people upside down. So why don't you tell us about that real quick?
Yeah, so back in December, I started like a small blog series, just putting out some feelers and seeing what people are interested in. And I wrote this article on handstands and how to get your first one-minute handstand against the wall. And it went really well. And, you know, I think like 300 people signed up in a week or something like that to learn how to do more handstands. And we got a ton of views on our website. And then over time, I kind of just kept interacting with these people and building on it and kind of figuring out what worked really well to teach people over the internet. And it developed into this 28-day handstand challenge where now I get probably emails every day from people saying they've made more progress in like a week than they've made in the past, you know, month or 6 months or something like that, just because they're seeing that commitment is probably the biggest thing that's standing in the way from getting a handstand as opposed to like one particular, you know, form improvement or something like that.
That's really interesting. So you say commitment and what, daily practice are turning out to be keys for people.
Yeah, and I think a big part of that is, firstly, people don't know what to do. That's what a lot of them tell me. They just have no idea where to start. And another problem is that a lot of them face fear every day, or they don't get started because they have fear. And when you do it every day, the fear, as you guys know from all your gymnastics, the fear just disappears.
Yeah, definitely. It's actually really interesting because the course that we most recently released and are about to re-release with some improvements is based on that same thing. It's daily practice. You know, you make a commitment to just do a little bit every day. And we also try to take that fear out of it as well, of not being able to do the skill, by giving them, you know, different levels and making it really easy and sort of removing the result. So you're spending 28 days focused on one skill, and we're actually spending 28 days with a different skill every day. So the idea isn't really just to learn to perfect any of them, but just to practice every day. So it's actually kind of interesting. We're doing very similar approaches, but with kind of different details there.
Yeah, I've actually started talking with some people who make like commitment apps, or they study or work with commitment on the daily. Like that's their business. Like some people who make iPhone apps for commitment. And I've been talking to them about some different things. And I'm actually thinking of putting together some interviews, because I think that's actually with those people, because I think that's actually much more important in a lot of cases, especially for those guests just getting started, like on your multivitamin course, just getting started with a commitment and learning to stay committed to something that you think is cool and seeing little progress every day from this small commitment that kind of blows up over time. And then you kind of create this addiction.
That's very cool. I know Ryan's favorite podcast that we've done so far, aside from our interview with Tony Two Scoops, was the one where we talked with James Clear about habit formation.
When I'm working with students, I have the privilege, of course, of working with people one-on-one over here in Japan. And so it's exactly what you said. It's that commitment and being able to perform. I don't want to say perform, but at least do something every day and work on getting over that fear. Because just like you said, it can be scary to be upside down. And when it's, you know, the very first time you're doing it, people have that fear of falling over. And so I really like your book, because a big part of it is dealing with that fear.
I think that the fear also stems from people thinking that they have to dedicate, you know, 4 hours a day. Like there are some people who are saying, like, you know, they won't even work with you unless you're planning on doing, you know, 4 hours a day of training. And that's not, that might work for some people really well, and you'll make a ton of progress in a short period of time. But most of us have all these lives and things that we need to deal with. And I think what's most illuminating to people who take that handstand challenge is that they've only put in 5 minutes a day. Maybe they expand it as they move on to 10 or 20 minutes or something. But a lot of these skills that you think are like, wow, they're so impressive, only take, you know, a small amount of commitment a day, and that builds up very, very quickly. And the fear and all that stuff just goes away.
And that's very true. It just making sure that the person actually starts. And you bring up a very good point. It's not just the fear of actually doing the skill, but continuing with it and thinking that you need to spend 4 hours to do it. So, yeah, I totally agree. It's about being able to just set aside a little bit of time to focus on that one skill, whether it be 5 minutes or even just 10 minutes a day.
Right. The only complication there is when you start talking about strength, like things like the muscle up, training that every day, you know, consistently every day for many sets and reps, that'll work against you. But I think when it comes to things like skills, it's a really easy hack to say, I'm just going to do 5 minutes of it a day. And it depends on your level of strength, what a skill training might be. And for most people, handstand skill training is pretty, it's a low hanging fruit. But I think there are a lot of skills out there that are just really easy to build on if you just dedicate a small amount of your day to it.
Very cool. That's actually a really interesting thing that you mentioned there, especially about muscle ups. We were just talking before we started recording too. Steve is a coach for the Progressive Calisthenics Certification with Al Cavadlo. And so you guys just recently had your first event, and you were saying that there were a lot of people there that basically they got their first muscle up, like several people got their very first muscle up right there and then. You want to talk about that a minute?
Yeah, so we had about 60 people at the first PCC, and more than a third of them, so I think around 25, so maybe even closer to 40% of them got their first muscle up. Most of them had the strength to do everything like correctly, but they needed the specific cues or a different way of looking at things that they hadn't tried before. A lot of bodyweight skills are, I guess, hard to know where you are in space, so it takes a good coach can look at that for them and, you know, help them get to that goal that they're trying to get towards.
Yeah, definitely. I think this is really interesting too. Like you said, they already had the strength, you know, through whatever methods they had been using before, barbells, kettlebells, or body weight even, but they didn't have the actual, the awareness in space and the ability to understand how to move their body correctly. I think this happens a lot. What do you guys think? I mean, there's kind of, you know, skill work and strength work seem to be, like, in a lot of ways, like, non-overlapping magisteria, you know? It's like they're one or the other, but there's some things that seem like the muscle up, you know, it could be strength or skill. So what's the deal with that?
Well, I think it's a matter of knowing what the prerequisite strength is. You know, just because I'm focused so intently on handstands now, my mind goes right back to that. But a lot of people don't realize that once you can hold a 60-second handstand against the wall, most of what you need to train is not strength-based. And I think similarly with the muscle-up, if you can do, you know, 5 pull-ups to your, you know, nipples or chest area, and you could do 5 really deep dips, then really it's just mostly technique. That's why negatives could be so effective when they have that base strength already.
And I agree, just like what you're saying, it's looking at, for example, well, in the muscle up, of course, a transition. And so making sure that you focus on getting that, the proper technique for that transition, and as well as a handstand. It, just like you said, once you do have that fundamental strength, then it's just a matter of finding the proper balance and making sure that your line is correct. So, that transfer. And then, of course, first focusing on making sure that you have that foundation of strength, so important. You know, in my case, I because I work on it so much, my one-arm handstand, it's the same way. In the beginning, it's just a matter of building the stamina to be able to get upside down and work on it. And then it's just a matter of finding the proper, literally, balance on one arm and being able to hold it. So,
yeah, I completely agree.
Cool. And so you mentioned also like requisite strength, which reminds me of another article that I think is probably one of your most popular ones on your site. It's actually less an article than a list of strength standards that you guys put together. You want to talk about that for a second?
Well, what do you want to know about it?
Well, kind of how did it come about? So, I mean, we've been talking about strength and skills. So how do you rank which skills are standard, or which skills are equivalent, even though there's maybe differences in skill level or strength level for different ones?
Well,
and maybe I guess even backing up to what's the goal of ranking these?
All right. Well, the goal was when we originally started that. Okay, get some background. Let me. You could edit that part out too.
No worries.
When we originally had taken the task on to develop this, we were working with Ryan Ford, who's the owner of Apex Movement, which is a parkour gym in Colorado. And he actually owns one in Northern California and in a couple different locations in Colorado now. So if you're ever in that area, you're interested in parkour training, I would definitely plug that and check that out. So sorry, that's a shameless plug, you guys.
But, no, Ryan's a good guy. So yeah, definitely.
Yeah, no, he's a great guy and their facilities are great. I trained there a lot when I was there, and that's one of the things that happened was when I was training there, developed a relationship with Ryan, and we were talking about strength training and skill training and parkour and how this all comes together, because there are a lot of parkour practitioners who they really struggle with strength. They focus a lot on the skill work and they don't ever take the time out to train their strength. So we said these people need some goals. They don't explicitly know what to do. And we had some people online that were following our site that just didn't know what to do. So we came up with the goals that we thought were most relevant to people interested in just being physically prepared, period. The skills that had the most translation to other skills in everyday life. And we compiled a big list of them. And we said, based on our experience coaching people like Steve and Gymkhana, Ryan with his Apex Movement crew, and just me with experience dealing with all of these people on the internet and through forums and things, what do we think are reasonable levels? And we based it off of world records, other common feats of strength and skill, and our own practical experience and measurements taken at Apex Movement.
Very interesting. That's actually really, really cool. Because I think that a lot of people, when they get started, or when they start discovering ways to work out and train besides like P90X or, you know, whatever machines are at the gym, when they discover YouTube and find out that people can do like muscle ups and planches and stuff, like immediately they say, I want to do the planche, which for like 99.99% of people, unfortunately, I don't care how long or hard you work at it, eventually you're probably not going to get it. It's just, unfortunately, it's just a, you know, there's not many people are going to do it. Either they're going to get sick of it or something. But a lot of people set these goals for themselves that are just like, you know, Superman level. And I think one of the most useful things of, you know, having this list of standards is it, even if it doesn't provide a direct path to some of these big goals, it at least shows that before you can really even, you know, even before you should be thinking about trying to learn a planche, that there's like a lot of other stuff that you should be focusing your energy on getting. There's other skills that are also worth your time, you know, that are in between there. And I think that that's really useful, even if it just shows people that, okay, maybe you might want to, you know, narrow your scope a bit at first.
Well, I think that the original problem was that exact problem you're talking about. People finish P90X, they finish Insanity, or maybe they just started parkour, which is a lot of people that we were dealing with at the time. And they're like, all right, great. What's next? What's next? How did I get to the next level? And I think that's the problem I was originally trying to address when we developed it. But I think, to be frank, it doesn't really solve that problem very well. Because at the end of the day, it's just a big list and it's still daunting and it's just as intimidating as anything else. And one of the reasons why P90X and Insanity, in my opinion, are so effective is that people are explicitly told, this is what you're doing, this is what you're working for, and then this is the before and after picture you could expect, and they hear about the good results. So I think that while it's an effective tool if you're really self-motivated and you're looking for some next things on your list, and I think it's a useful resource for like coaches and things like that, but in terms of a training tool, I think it falls a little short, and that's me saying that as my own work who put a lot of work into it. But that's one of the reasons why I made the handstand challenge, because I want to open up people's eyes and say, this stuff isn't that hard. You could get started with doing something like a handstand, and then you can move into buying Overcoming Gravity or look at a list like that and then pick out the things. And hopefully that moves you one step closer to you know, doing something that's a little bit better than doing a cookie cutter program like P90X or something like that.
That's actually really interesting too, because I've often thought this about, you know, a lot of times when we're talking about skill-based training, we talk about progressions, right? You do basic skill A, then skill B, C, D, and you get a little harder each time. And so I think people a lot of times begin to obsess over the progression and what level they're at or what stage in the progression they're at. And instead of just nailing the shit out of where they are, they're too focused on getting to the next level or the next bit or the next bit. And so, yeah, I totally agree with that, that maybe it's better to just be told what to do sometimes and just focus on, you know, today's session that I've been told by my coach or my program or whatever, and not worrying about getting to the next progression and just doing today's work right now.
Right.
Yeah, let me step back a little bit. I think the underlying purpose of the skill standards is back in, I think, we put them together in 2007, maybe, or maybe a couple years after that.
But 2009, actually, yeah.
2009, okay. Yeah, so a couple years after that. Parkour is a fairly new overall discipline. I guess it hasn't been around more than a decade now, or slightly more than a decade. And all the people practicing it are pretty much I guess, new. They haven't, a lot of them, aside from the people who like come over from gymnastics or martial arts, don't have any previous like athletic experience. So we know that strength is kind of the foundation of athletic ability overall. So we're trying to look for a way to show people that they need to be well-rounded in their abilities to be good at certain things, to be good at parkour. Like, for example, if your squat's not strong, then you're probably not going to have a good jumping ability. Yeah. If your upper body strength is not strong, you're probably not going to be able to do a climb up that well.
If you're listening to the podcast and you decided to Google this or go to our website and look at it, you probably don't have the chance to read the long introduction that goes along with it. But that's why we recommend that everybody can get to level three. We kind of view a level three as something that is easily attainable, maybe not immediately attainable, but everybody should be able to hit level three on all those skills. And if you do, you should be a pretty well-rounded athlete who's ready for something like parkour, which is very multimodal, where you have to do jumping and climbing and running and all that other sort of stuff. Right, Steve? I didn't lose sight of that.
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Cool. So I think also, speaking of like well-rounded and multimodal, here's something else that's, you know, interesting. So a lot of the things we do get lumped into what's sometimes called body weight training. And you know, at GMB, we don't actually teach any courses in weight training because, I mean, frankly, there's about a billion weight training courses out there, and it's not something we specialize in, so we didn't feel the need to add one more to that. But we also still see the need and utility of using weights. And Steve, I know, for example, you have mentioned several times that, you know, if you're really trying to develop leg strength, that you highly recommend mostly what, squats and deadlifts usually, correct?
Yeah, I mean, mainly once you get to like single leg squats / pistols and shrimp squats, I mean, if you have good leg strength, if you can probably do around a double body weight squat, you can probably do a pistol and shrimp as long as you gain the requisite hip mobility. But you can't really take those movements unless you add a weight vest or a dumbbell to any higher strength level. I mean, you can learn how to jump out of them and things of that nature, but that's not really going to build the strength so much as actually putting a barbell on your back or lifting it up from the ground.
Yeah, and so there's you know, and it's not just for maximal leg strength either. There's a lot of cases in which, you know, weights are the right tool for the job. And so I think that it's really great that you guys, you know, recommend using the right tool for the job and not getting pigeonholed into one particular mode or discipline. There we go again, talking about not being members of a particular discipline, but, you know, I think it's good that, you know, like Chris mentioned earlier, about finding the right way to meet that person's goals and not necessarily trying to just spread the gospel of what you guys have decided you want everyone to learn. I think that that's something that's really cool.
Yeah, I think everything's kind of like a tool in the toolbox, to borrow that expression. I mean, even isolation stuff like bicep curls, wrist curls, they have their place, such as in physical therapy or rehab, where you need to focus on specific things. So I think excluding exercises or other things like kettlebells, barbells, at the expense of just sticking with body weight training can be a mistake, because depending on the person's goals or if they have the rehab or if they're trying to do a certain thing, then, I mean, you need different things, different implements sometimes to help you meet your goals faster.
Yeah, actually, when I was visiting Ryan a couple months ago and went to his studio there in Osaka, I actually found his set of pink dumbbells.
we all got them. They're in some closet somewhere, don't we?
Yeah, exactly. The pink 45-pound dumbbells. Of course,
it's Krylon. No, it's spray paint. Yeah, it's cool.
Yeah. No, but that, you know, it's a great point. And so, using the proper tool, but also understanding that just because you do have these tools available, it doesn't mean that you should necessarily use them and try and use them all at the same time. Just like what both of you mentioned, it's having that goal and making sure that you're using them in a proper way to make sure you're getting towards that goal. So just like what Andy was saying, I do lift weights, but my weightlifting, in my case for the shoulders, is to make sure that my shoulders are still strong so that I can keep doing what I want to do. So rehab, prehab kind of deal.
Well, I also think a lot of us aren't working out like in a gym environment. I mean, I know I personally in a environment where there's a coach watching you all the time, I don't think it's practical for most of us to train that way. And I think by incorporating barbells and other things into your weight training and even moving from one progression to another within body weight training, you kind of get perspective because you're able to try different techniques, just like what Steve was saying earlier about how some people just needed to try different techniques with their muscle up. And then it kind of, they saw something or they felt something feel another way, or they felt their handstand click another way. And then they're like, oh, this makes sense in terms of like, now I could feel my body in space a little bit more. And that barbell stuff does translate back and forth, in my opinion, and in my experience.
Yeah, definitely. Which also reminds me, like, sometimes we'll get questions from people that are like, hey, why do you guys, so in the GMBR particular courses, basically, we have a course that uses gymnastic rings. We have a course that focuses on parallette work. And so a lot of times we'll get questions from people that are like, well, I want to do parallettes and rings at the same time. But what I think people are mistaking there is the tool for the outcome, right? Because you can train, you know, the same levels of strength on parallettes or rings. You're just doing different movements, really, you know? And same thing, like you said, going from, you know, body weight to barbells or whatever, you're doing similar movements and getting similar strength, but you're hitting it coming from a different path, maybe, and you get to see how it's a little bit different and maybe which tool is the best one for you in that particular aspect at that time, if that makes any sense at all.
Yeah, I think maybe I could elucidate that with an example. Like when I first started training rings handstands, I saw a big translation over my normal handstands just because I noticed a lot of things like in how I had to press up on rings without a lot of movement versus like a kick up, or when I just the body alignment feeling more solid because it has to on rings versus on ground. Is that what you're kind of talking
about?
Yeah,
yeah.
And that's a really good example, Chris. Same thing. In working with people over here on their handstands, sometimes what I will do is purposely put them on a different apparatus, whether it be rings or parallettes or something like that, just so that they can get the feel of what needs to happen and how they can control it better when they go back to the ground, or if maybe they're working on a block or something like that. So, yeah.
Yeah, even something more like low level, like an L-sit. L-sit's going to be different on parallettes than it is on floor, than it is on rings. And, yeah. I mean, each have their benefits to working up to the correct progression or through the correct progression. So,
and this is something that I experience a lot when I talk to people. They'll like try for their L-sit and they'll be working on it, for example, for, you know, a few months at a time, and then they'll stagnate and then they'll just kind of get fed up and they'll not change what they're doing with regard to the L-sit. They'll think like that's the only way to work it. But if you just change the apparatus, for example, if you go from Florida to parallettes or from parallettes to rings, it might help you break through that plateau. So that might be a practical bit of advice for anybody who's at a plateau and they've been stuck there for a month or so. That's definitely the time you should be changing. I think that's something that's overlooked a lot. I mean, I know we say it in our circles a lot, but if you get stuck for like a few weeks, that's when you should just expand out a little bit and go back to the drawing board and restart rather than keep banging your head against the wall.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that. Banging your head against the wall is a phrase that I use quite a lot for a lot of things I see people doing. And yeah, you want to avoid head wall bangage wherever possible.
Yeah. I mean, if something's not working that well, you want to make small changes. You don't want to just throw it all out and try to start over. You want to make small incremental changes, whether it's with your sets or reps or move into a different apparatus to try to get through that plateau. You don't want to, you know, throw everything out and just forget everything, because then you'll just regress when you come back to it later.
Yeah. I also think that's a really good a good time to maybe switch your focus from strength to skill, or vice versa, from skill to strength. You know, if you're working on a particular skill and you've stalled on it, well, then work on building strength around that. And if you're working on strength and you stall, work on, you know, applying that strength to skills that use it. And then, you know, when you come back to it, maybe you'll have developed more capacity to continue progressing.
I think that last bit is really good for motivation. When you've been working on strength for a long time, go and hit some skills really hard. Like if you've been working on handstand push-ups for a long time or something like that, and you're not making any progress on your freestanding handstand push-up, go and try and see how long you could hold a handstand now. Did that improve? And other things like that. Are you feeling more comfortable upside down? Did it help your handstand presses? Are you able to do handstand presses now more easily or at all, where you might not have before? And in my experience, whenever I would do something like that, I was on like a long strength training stint, and then I would go back to skills. Once I started to get frustrated, I would like be breaking through new skills, and I would have these tick marks going off all over my training log. So that's really, really valuable information, Andy. I think that's a really good tip.
Cool. Yeah. I mean, basically we just get a lot of messages from people that say, holy shit, guys, I couldn't believe it. I just did 4 weeks of your most basic level of your Parallettes course, and suddenly I can do more pull-ups, you know, which right. We don't have any pull-ups in the Parallettes course. And people are always asking us, shouldn't I be adding pull-ups to make this a balanced program? And we're saying, no. Just do the program, and people will do something with no pull-ups, and suddenly their pull-ups get better. And they're surprising when something that doesn't appear related improves. But I think it happens a lot because you're starting to apply things that maybe you weren't before.
Yeah, Steve is great at this, because that's when we first started talking, Steve and I, back in like 07, and well, even before that, we were probably talking in 05, 06. He would always say things like, well, okay, well, work on your planche for a little while, and then like in 4 months, just try your back lever and you should be able to do it. And there's all these like subtle things that have these crossovers, and I feel kind of like that's all in Steve's head somewhere. But he has all these like little things, like planche and back lever sticks out in my head a lot. And like, for example, iron cross and one-arm chin-ups have an extremely tight correlation that people just don't appreciate or realize. And that's why we focus on in that skills guidelines, these skills that had these like really high translatability to one another. So that way you could focus on just a few things.
Cool. Speaking of the mess in Steve's head right now, tell us how the progress is on the second edition of Overcoming Gravity.
I have my general outline right now for the whole book, and it's pretty much just getting everything from my head onto paper at this point.
Should be an easy task, right?
It's going to be longer. It's going to have a lot more focus on programming for beginners. I mean, the current book is pretty good overall. Like, it's a lot of knowledge, but it's not as focused as I want it. I would say it's more for intermediates at this moment, people who know kind of have been around bodyweight training, have been training a little bit, and then they can pick up the info and use it. I wanted to make Overcoming Gravity more towards beginners on how to, you know, build up through there, and then how to use that information to get from intermediate to advanced. So I'm going to do a lot of more focus on like specific programming in terms of how to build the routines at different various ability levels. So that should be hopefully good everybody.
I saw the table of contents. It looks pretty good. There's going to be a lot more focus on routines and how to make routines for yourself and for your specific goals. So he has it's actually, I think, where that's one section in the current book, it's five or six and something like that. Three main sections.
Spreading it out, and then how to advance the routines a bit better. Just with more examples, because I laid out the info, but I didn't give like a lot of examples on how specifically to, you know, build a routine step by step.
I think that's really important. People need that. I think it's easy to take it for granted as people who have experienced a lot of different types of training and kind of studied it for a while. We take for granted that, you know, if you have one and one, then two should be obvious, right? But maybe not everyone sees the plus sign, or which is a right. kind of dumb analogy. But, you know, I think a lot of people that haven't been around or haven't been studying stuff, they just don't know, or even if things look like they're spelled out from our point of view, it's really useful to understand that people, that not everyone has their experience. I guess that's me speaking as a teacher. I learned early on that a lot of things I thought were really obvious did not make a damn bit of sense to my students. And I had to really, you know, look again at everything I was saying. So I think it's really important. I think a lot of experts or people that can do stuff maybe don't automatically become great teachers. And I think that, you know, you guys are working with, you know, hundreds, thousands of people, I guess, online over all over the world. And, you know, we've got that benefit, too. And so we've got the ability to really see the things that have caused problems for people and what needs better explanation rather than just, well, this worked for me. And so follow my steps.
Right. Actually, if I just, like, for example, put together a handstand progression that worked for me, it would take a year to get your first handstand, because that's how long it took me to get mine. And I think a lot of people, once they get skills, they don't necessarily know how to break them down, because they might not have even learned it in the most efficient way possible.
Yeah, absolutely. Cool. So I've got one more question for you guys. Basically, I want to know this. Are you jacked?
Steve's jacked.
Steve is jacked.
I'm actually trying to put on like 10 more pounds of muscle at my current height, because I'm 5'8 and about 145, and that's fairly light for my height overall. So I think 10 more pounds of muscle would do me pretty good overall for body weight training specifically.
Yeah, but I'm about the same height, and I think the heaviest I ever got semi-lean was like 150, but that was all just like, that was all my legs, because I was just squatting constantly. That was a long time ago too.
If you saw Steve at the gym doing his 2-time body weight dip, you'd probably think he was really jacked, no matter how much muscle or how cut he was, probably.
That's impressive.
Yeah. It is impressive. He has weights hanging from his neck, his legs, his chest. It's just like one big weight vest.
Awesome. I know Ryan also has probably got lingering thoughts of inadequacy on this too, because after all his training, he's still not big.
Really feel inadequate
about
Ryan?
No.
Well, it's just funny. I'm totally kidding.
No, I'm fine. It's just funny because we get comments all the time on YouTube, and it's like, man, I can't believe how small you are and you can do all this stuff. And I'm like, okay, whatever, dude. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think that goes back to, a lot of people don't realize that a lot of strength is completely neurological, and it's just using the muscles properly. Except Steve, because he's just like 145 pounds of solid muscle, but he has just because who he is.
Awesome. Cool. Ryan, do you have anything else you want to ask these guys?
No, not really. I just want to say thanks for sharing what you guys are doing. I really, really enjoyed the talk. I made it a point today to kind of sit back and just listen. So thanks for being here today with us.
Yeah, that's not bad. I heard on another podcast I was listening to today, you berated a lot of your clients pretty harshly.
I'm pretty harsh. Ha ha. I happen to have one rant one time during the podcast, and unfortunately, I think everybody just listened to that one. So.
Yeah, I think so. Well, you know, Jarlo had a pretty good attack on the vegan community as well, so you guys are out.
Awesome. So I definitely want to thank you guys. You know, is this the first time your voices have been heard in public? I'm not sure.
Probably on the interwebs.
All right. Well, hey.
I went to the PCC, so yeah. I think they have my voice somewhere around there.
Yeah, so people know that you and Michael Jackson aren't the same person, at least.
Hopefully.
Yeah. Hopefully. Cool. Awesome. Well, thank you so much. Everyone listening, check out the 28-day handstand challenge. It's daily, piece-by-piece information that's going to help you get over the fear and help you, you know exactly what to do each day, and, you know, eat the elephant a bite at a time, I guess. And it seems to be working really damn well for a lot of people. So that's good stuff. And looking forward to the next edition of Overcoming Gravity whenever the magnum opus actually gets completed. And so thank you guys so much.
Yeah, no problem. If any of the listeners are interested, they can go to just Google 28-Day Handstand Challenge. That'll bring it up. If you Google Overcoming Gravity, it'll bring you right there as well. You can sign up. We'll send you an alert when the next one is ready or something like that.
Cool. All right. Excellent.
All right. Awesome. Thanks a lot, guys. It was great to be here.
Thank you. Thank you.